This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's a hump day. It's our hump show, middle show of the work week, and we're starting off Wednesday with, well, just with weird and wacky and goofy, because that's generally what I do. And my friends tell me I'm funnier on the radio when I'm tired. I don't know if that's intentional. Probably not. But I do appreciate that goofy can still be entertaining. And I don't mind if you laugh at me. It's After Hours on our Facebook page, also at Amy After Hours online on Twix. I will go back and answer a bunch of your Ask Amy questions, because we were doing a bit of the Thanksgiving / food theme. But I see some of you asking me things like my favorite Saturday morning cartoon. I have to answer this one. Scooby-Doo. My brother and I loved Scooby-Doo. It was our favorite. We were glued to the TV for Scooby-Doo. Others of you asking me whether or not Die Hard is a Christmas movie. We'll have to wait until next week for that. Because I have a very strong opinion about Die Hard, whether or not it's a Christmas movie. But we have a lot to get to, Pete. So we'll have to debate that. Well, I don't know. What if we're on the same side, though? One of us will have to take the opposite side just for fun.
Right. I one thing about Die Hard, I like some of the roles in Die Hard, some of the people that play some certain roles in Die Hard.
Terrific. So see, these are all kinds of things that come out of the woodworks, questions that must be answered as we get close to the holiday season, which, you guys, we are just over a week away from Thanksgiving. So again, good morning to you. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. We had a lot of fun dissecting some of the deeper questions regarding coaching changes in the upcoming offseason, though they may not even take that long. So we've been going around and around about the Cowboys, and I think a lot of people would tell you it's a foregone conclusion that Mike McCarthy is fired. I feel bad about that. I genuinely like him, and I wonder if this could be his last head coaching gig. I don't know. Sometimes the NFL and ownership is weird. But we've seen what's happened with older coaches who are established, who've been around for a long time, that there seems to be a trend away from that. For better or for worse, more and more teams are hiring guys who have no head coaching experience but are coming out of the Andy Reid tree, or the John Harbaugh tree, or the Sean McVay tree, or the Kyle Shanahan tree. And that means you've got guys like Mike Vrabel, Ron Rivera, Bill Belichick, Pete Carroll, who said he wanted to coach again. You've got older guys with experience who don't have gigs. Dennis Allen just got fired. So, but the trend is away from that, and the NFL is a copycat league. But we know there are places where it doesn't work. Let's be honest. Now, I don't necessarily think all the Jets' failures are Robert Saleh's fault, but at the beginning when they brought him in, he was a little bit over his skis. He had a coaching staff of all new guys too in those new positions. And so it can be a very steep learning curve. Brian Flores is out there. His name is now being thrown around as a possible, I don't want to say regurgitated, but a reboot, if you will, at head coach. So maybe we'll see a trend back toward guys who have experience, maybe not. I mean, it's a mixed bag, right? Dan Campbell, he's been A+ winner in Detroit. I think a lot of people would tell you that, you know, Nick Sirianni's had a wild ride there in Philadelphia, but he did take them to a Super Bowl in year number two. We see what's happening with, say, Jonathan Gannon in Arizona. That seems to be working well now that he's got a quarterback. Shane Steichen, if they can get their quarterback situation settled. The Colts have been trending upward as well. Mike McDaniel. Now, it's hard to judge him because they haven't had Tua the entire time, but when they did, they led the NFL in offense, and Tua had more passing yards than any quarterback in the league. So they got the right pieces in place. Mike McDonald in Seattle. I know that right now they're 5-5, but early returns are he is a winner there, and he brings a ton of energy and credibility just because of the way that he treats the guys and the way that he's kind of no nonsense and real disciplined. And so there's a lot of places where the new coaches are working. There's other places where you kind of wonder, was this a swing and a miss? And so that'll be an interesting question that we have to answer in the offseason. But the Deion Sanders to Dallas, if Shedeur Sanders is the quarterback there, that is seemingly gaining a lot of traction. And I suppose we have Michael Irvin to thank for stoking these fires. He was a guest on The Herd.
If Shedeur went to the Cowboys, Deion would accept the job.
I believe 100%. And I can tell you, good sources have told me that. Great sources have told me that. That's all I can say like that without violating anything else.
Their evil laughter. It's a little bit sinister, is it not, that laughter? Do I laugh like that, Pete? I know sometimes I laugh like a hyena, but do I laugh like that? Deep, like I've got some dark secret?
It's a deep, I'm going to get you laugh.
I'll get you, my pretty. It's just very sinister. Devious. Devious is another good word. ew, stop it. Colin Cowherd, my former colleague, and Michael Irvin having a little dark secret devious laughter moment. Now, generally, I laugh when other people laugh, but that was, their laughter was awkward. Now, Deion Sanders. Okay. Deion Sanders. All right. Deion. Okay. See, I can't focus when you do that. Deion Sanders is getting the question asked of him, too. And he didn't like the fact that his boss was in the room when he was most recently asked about the rumors that he would head to the Cowboys.
You going to talk about me going somewhere with my AD in here? Yeah, he mentioned us with a lot of other stuff before we started winning, too, didn't he? that wasn't fair, was it? Like, I'm happy where I am, man. I'm good. I got a kickstand down. You know what a kickstand is? A lot of people don't in there, not of age, don't know what a kickstand is.
I do.
That means I'm resting. I'm good. I'm happy. I'm excited. I'm enthusiastic about where I am. I love it here. I truly do. Next question.
So he says he's got his kickstand down. He's happy. He's fine. But what is Michael Irvin saying then? And there is some talk that if Shedeur ends up in Dallas, if they happen to work the system and game the system and finagle him to Dallas, that Deion, because Shedeur would want to play for his dad and Deion would want to coach his son. And we know Deion, I mean, he's got sway with that family. We're not talking about kids that don't listen to him and don't pay attention to him. He took his entire family to Colorado. He's got sons playing for him. His daughter runs his business and takes care of him, runs his house. And so they're a pretty tight family. So you could see where this might be a thing. It just would take a bunch of different dominoes dropping. In addition to that, of course, you had the situation with the Jets on Tuesday where Woody Johnson fired Joe Douglas, the general manager. All right, let's not laugh at other people's demise. You never know,
laughing
Pete.
At the Jets.
It could be you and I who end up getting fired, right? Or getting let go.
Well, you know what? I hope someone laughs at me if I get fired.
No, what? That's rude. Why would you do that? It happens. What Keep goes around comes around.
Keep it light.
Be careful. What goes around comes around. Now, Jeff Ulbrich, he had talked going into the bye week about how everything was kind of open and under investigation, that they were looking at everything. I wonder if he meant Joe Douglas.
The time for taking a deep breath is not yet. Like, we got to take a deep dive into who we are and just be completely honest and hear the criticisms and grow from the criticisms. And that's not just players, that's coaches as well. You know, not being stubborn to the point where anybody's pointing the finger at anybody else other than themselves.
Is it too late for that? I guess you're evaluating because there are jobs on the line, but this is what we heard going into the season. Aaron Rodgers actually admitted that if he didn't play well, people were probably going to get fired. I don't know if that was, prescient?
A premonition,
but isn't there a word like prescient? I'm going to have to look it up now. Prescience? Was that prescience? P-R-E-S-C. Yeah, prescient. Hold on. Got it. Having or showing knowledge of events before they take place. Boom.
Right.
Are you kidding me right now? Boom. I need some devious laughter up in here. I know I didn't get the word on the first try, but prescient. prescient. I've heard it prescient, so I'm not going to change it. It's revelatory. Pete, it's insightful. Other synonyms, prophetic, psychic. Oh, would we call Aaron Rodgers visionary? No, I don't think we would.
No, because he would have retired after the little seance where he was away.
In the darkness retreat? Yes. The seance where he came out and decided he was going to ruin the Jets franchise? It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence at A-Law Radio if you too would like to share your impressive vocabulary. Okay, so we're going to leave that behind for now. We'll get back to it. But it was Cavaliers and Celtics in Boston on that wacky green court, the NBA Cup last night.
Garland, stop and start, tries the right side, goes for the scoop shot, blocked by Horford, off the glass into the hands of Jason Tatum. Horford stayed with him the entire way. Tatum, stop and start, steps back on Niang, left side three, swish.
Man, that was nice.
Tatum moving to his left, he steps right into an open three, and the crowd will tell you he got another one. With it, he passes De'Aaron Fox and quickly regains the NBA scoring lead. Tatum driving on Niang, knocks him away, so he's all alone for a left side three at the buzzer. Sixth three of the night for Jason Tatum, and the Celtics have needed every one of them. Horford breaks free from the pack, floats it ahead to Tatum, steps to his right, now attacks baseline, Euro step, kick to the wind, open, pressure, three, oh. Got it.
And that was huge. That was a huge play.
Tale of a couple different games in this one, though, and there were a bunch of spurts because there's so many great athletes and great scorers. The Celtics shot the lights out from downtown in the first half specifically and built a 21-point lead, only to see the Cavaliers come roaring back and cut that deficit to two. Not because of the threes, actually. If you only looked at the stats, you know what the Celtics do when they start hitting threes like they did with Jason Tatum with 6-for-10 from deep and Peyton Pritchard and Derek White and Al Horford. When they start hitting teams with a barrage of threes, most teams just fold. Most teams can't stand up against that barrage of threes. But the Cavs did, and they were able to come back in that third quarter and cut the deficit to two. So the fourth quarter was tight. It really did go down to the wire. Donovan Mitchell, he's bloodied in there trying to make something happen in the late stages. I mean, I thought this was a Cavs effort that they could be proud of moving forward.
Drew Holiday, pressure to the backcourt, gets it away safely to Jaylen Brown. That's the guy the Cavs want to foul. But Jaylen gets rid of it to Horford, who's all alone under the basket for the two-hand slam. Five-point game, down to 6 seconds to go. Donovan Mitchell into the front court, jumps in with three, bounces out, offensive rebound. Mobley, Jerome's putback is good, but it all comes too late. And the Celtics survive a furious comeback by the Cleveland Cavaliers. And the second longest season opening win streak comes to an end.
Temple, we just locked in on defense. We've been in that situation a million times where it's like, you know, it's time to win. It's time to lock in, you know, guard your yard, help each other on defense, get a stop, go down on offense and find out who we're trying to attack, where we need to put guys at and make the right play.
33 points, a dozen rebounds, 7 assists, 2 steals, and Jason Tatum is playing some incredible basketball to start the season. Derek White was asked, and I'm sure this question was posed to a lot of different guys, but whether or not they were aware that the Cavaliers started out the season 15-0.
Yeah, we knew. I think everybody knew that they were undefeated, and coming to our building and also it's an NBA Cup game. We already lost one game, so it was a really big game in that aspect. So, we were all aware.
Very well coached, right? They got new coaching staff and things like that. I think they're just playing a lot faster and more free this year. The ball's not necessarily sticking, so they just put a lot of pressure on you. Then they have guys that, you know, individually can make plays.
A 40-point third quarter for Cleveland. You can see the impact of Kenny Atkinson and what he brought from Golden State and what he's trying to recreate offensively. And that's been a major piece of why they started out the hottest team in the game with 15 consecutive wins, second longest streak ever for an NBA team to begin a season. And Jason Tatum giving props to what's different about this team. Now, they'll meet again. I think it's 2 weeks down the road. This was part of the NBA Cup, the Tuesday night, the green court, all of that jazz, but a great crowd. Love the energy for a game early in the season like this one. And Donovan Mitchell, another 35 points and 8 rebounds. But what can they take away? Like AI, artificial intelligence, you can use this game to get better.
Just a test. That's his big test. You know what I mean? Whether win, lose, or draw, it's just a test. And, you know, obviously you want to learn and through wins, you know what I mean? But we lost tonight, but there's a lot we can take away from good in the second half and a lot we can learn from in the first half to get better at.
And it's not on the players. I think that's game plan, too. Like, I feel like, you know, it's a little bit on me, not, you know, maybe not prepared enough for what they were throwing at us. And we adjusted in the second half, but... especially that big second quarter, that was too much to overcome.
Well, they almost overcame it. Again, 21 points down to just 2, and Atkinson taking credit for what he called bad offense, or just not the offense that they've been putting out there, especially to start games. But if you consider, Darius Garland was 3-for-21 from the floor, and he had a really off night. They also got, I mean, Donovan had 35, but he was only 3-of-11 from beyond the arc. So they were not putting up the volume of threes that would help them to keep pace. And they were also without Caris LeVert, who I'll just throw out the stat that's most recent. I don't know if it held through last night, but he's the second best plus minus guy in the NBA. Meaning when he's on the court, the team is plus as opposed to minus, right? They're in a positive point differential as opposed to a negative. And to the tune of he's second best in the NBA at making sure his team is on the plus side. So there were a lot of pieces missing for them, and to see them come back. Atkinson said after the game, we're looking for feedback to essentially gauge ourselves against the best team in the league, the defending champions, and giving them proper deference. But also, this is the team that beat the Cavaliers in the Eastern Conference semifinals. We had a great conversation with Chris Fedor in Boston. He covers the Cavs, part-time host on our Cleveland affiliate, 92.3 The Fan. Not about the game necessarily, but just about the streak and about the team and the change, and also the fan reaction to this team. So we'll bring back part of that because it was really good stuff. And then, yeah, on the back end, a little more from the world of football, college football rankings. The third iteration came out on Tuesday, and there's always some question marks. But here's the thing, here's a secret. They do it just to create conversation, right? So it's conversation starters. I honestly think they're jerking us around until we get to the last rankings. Good morning to you. Glad to have you with us at A-Law Radio. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
It was fun. You know, when you're playing basketball, good basketball, and obviously winning games, whether it's blowouts, close games, come from behind wins, you know, you enjoy these moments. And for us, you know, it's great to be part of history. We wish we'd have kept it going, but like I said, there's no championships in November. This is a great part of the season. Now we just continue to we're not losing 2 in a row. That's the goal.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Donovan Mitchell, point man, superstar for the Cleveland Cavaliers. It was fun. We enjoyed it. Now we turn to a different goal. Just don't drop 2 games in a row. But the 15-0 start to begin the season makes them second best all time out of the gates next to those Golden State Warriors in 15-16, who incidentally lost to the Cavs in the NBA Finals that season. But as you heard with Sean Grandy and Cedric Maxwell on Celtics radio, it was bombs away from beyond the arc, and the Celtics get a big win in the Tuesday version of the NBA Cup. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Had a chance to catch up with Chris Fedor, who covers the Cavs for the Cleveland Plain Dealer and Cleveland.com. Really good stuff about the makeup of this team. Go back and catch the whole conversation on our podcast. But I wanted to know from him how much talk there was about this team internally being undefeated.
Oh, man, they downplayed it as it was going on, as you would expect coaches and players to. But, like, Donovan Mitchell was fighting to not miss the game over the weekend against Charlotte because he didn't want that to be the one that they were going to lose. So the Cavs wanted to be a part of history, of course. If you're a competitor, if you have that within your grasp or you feel like it's within your grasp, you want to continue to chase it. You want to be a part of that. You want to have that opportunity. It was meaningful to them. There's no doubt. Every player in that locker room knew the number 24. the record set by the Golden State Warriors. And I don't think it was a case, Amy, where they were looking ahead to the schedule and they were like, oh, man, if we're going to get to 25 and we're going to break the Warriors' record, that means we have to beat Boston twice, we have to beat Denver, and then the 25th win would be on the road against Miami, a place where we never win. Like, I don't think it got to that point, but they wanted these games. And they were trying to continue this winning streak for as long as they possibly could. And it was fun while it lasted, and they played really, really good basketball during that stretch. But the times that they said, you know, it's not on our mind, that was a complete and utter lie, because it was.
Kenny Atkinson has certainly implemented the new offense. We've talked about that. He's changed the way that these guys operate together on the court. But off the court, in the locker room, what does he bring to the table as a leader?
I think the thing that he has brought, Amy, is more of a looseness. And I think there's a recognition on his behalf. And it's something that maybe J.B. Bickerstaff didn't recognize as much, because he had to take them through the rebuild. He had to take them through the dark times. And he never really switched the mentality of, this is no longer a rebuilding team. Like, this is a team that is a legitimate contender. And I think sometimes he treated a team that they, in that locker room, thought they were good enough and believed they should have had, you know, big-time aspirations and expectations. At times, it felt like JV was kind of treating them like they were still going through that rebuild. But with a fresh set of eyes and a new perspective, Kenny has brought more of a looseness. And I think it's something that he learned from Golden State, being around Steve Kerr. You don't have to take everything so seriously. You can have fun. You can play music, right? You can do trivia nights, something that the Cavs have done. You can play two-hand touch to finish a practice with a football. Like, all these different kinds of things to try and make it more of a fun environment. Because 82 games is a grind, and this schedule can wear on you. And you just have to break from the monotony of what the day-to-day can become in today's NBA. And there's a joy in that locker room. There's a looseness, like I said, in that locker room. It doesn't mean that they're not businesslike, and it doesn't mean that they don't have high expectations, but there's just a different vibe around this team with Kenny coming from Golden State. There's a lot of Warriors influence both on and off the court when it comes to the Cavs.
And considering the Cavaliers-Warriors history, how are fans embracing this team and this new coach?
Oh my God, Amy, they love this team. The style is one that they've been calling for the last couple of years. They're less predictable on the offensive end of the floor. It's not so much reliance on the pick and roll. A lot of selflessness, a lot of sacrifice, a lot of ball movement, making the extra pass. It's not just Donovan carrying them to what was a 15-0 record coming into tonight's game against the Celtics. This is November. This is a football town in Cleveland.
Right.
This is supposed to be Brown season, right? There was a Sunday game that they played just recently against the Charlotte Hornets. Like, no offense to Charlotte, but that is a lottery-bound team that is not anywhere close to the Cavs' level. And Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse was rocking because they have embraced this team. They have put their arms around this team, and it has kind of given a palate cleanser for the terrible Brown season that went off the rails a couple of weeks ago. So, you know, it made November basketball fun when it's usually not this level of entertaining. It gave fans something to turn to with the Browns being a disaster. So they're on board with this team. They believe in this team. And I think this team has given this city hope. Even if it's not this year, the future's still bright, and a championship in some major sport is possible.
Before I let you go, one last question about Donovan Mitchell, because he predates Kenny. This is early in his third year with the Cavaliers. How did he find a home there in Cleveland?
I think part of it, Amy, is like the kind of superstar he is. He's a selfless superstar. He's a low-maintenance superstar. There was this belief about Donovan that, like, he needed a big market, that he needed L.A., Miami, New York, or something like that. He became Donovan Mitchell, you know, one of the best players in the NBA in Utah, right? He became Donovan Mitchell with a signature shoe from Adidas in Utah. So I think Donovan understands that he wants to be the face of the NBA. When LeBron is gone, when KD is gone, when Steph is gone, and they're looking for the next American-born superstar in the NBA. He wants it to be him. He's on record saying that. But I think he understands it's not about market. It's about winning. And I think he saw a future here in Cleveland, and he saw a roster here in Cleveland that he felt like he could grow with. Part of the reason why he re-signed was because of Evan Mobley and the future of Evan Mobley. You've got this young guy that he's going to grow alongside. Kenny Atkinson has matched the minutes, basically, of Donovan Mitchell and Evan Mobley. Donovan has empowered him. Donovan has elevated him. And he saw last year in the Eastern Conference semifinals on a court against the Celtics, future Hall of Famers, multi-time champions, all-stars, Evan be one of the best players in that series. And he said, you know, I can help him get to the next level, and he can help me with my game, making it easier for me. So that, to me, is part of the reason why Donovan's such a good fit in Cleveland. All that stuff that isn't specific to Cleveland doesn't matter all that much to him. He just wants to hoop, and he just wants to win. And he fits the mentality of the city. He's embraced the city. He goes to high school basketball games.
Oh, I love that.
He puts on Guardians jerseys. He smacks the guitar down before Browns games. So he fits in really, really well, not just on this team, not just in this organization, but in the city as well.
I love that answer about Donovan Mitchell. Donovan predates Kenny Atkinson, obviously, and we know sometimes there can be conflicts between coaches and superstars, but also this idea that Donovan had to go somewhere else to be among the elite in the NBA or to win, and what he cares about is playing hoops. What he cares about is the fit, and now it's coming together around Donovan. He is the driving force, and he is the star, but the Mobley piece, I love how Chris outlines that. The fact that they've got Jared Allen as well, just the different pieces that Kenny Atkinson can use and put them in places where they are meant to succeed, but that Donovan is happy with that. He's not looking to start a business. He doesn't need to be in L.A. to make movies. And there's nothing wrong with that, just that this is Donovan's priority right now, and he's the perfect fit for what is a blue-collar city in Cleveland. And the fact that he has embraced that and loves it there. Just that to me is terrific. You need leadership like that. By the way, and the whole conversation is on our podcast, so it's good stuff with Chris, who joined us from Boston following that game between Cavs and Celtics. You can tell these guys are into the NBA Cup because they mention it, right? It's kind of funny. I think there's extra money. There's the trip to Vegas. But fans still, I have people asking me all the time, what's with the crazy colored courts and just the different color schemes? So I get this text message, Pete, from my mom's husband last night. He says to me, have you seen the Celtics' new court? So that's what he thought it was. He thought the Celtics had changed their court entirely. And I said, yeah, I have. It's bright. I said, it's part of their in-season tournament. This is how the NBA lets fans know that this is something different. Again, most fans, if you're casual, you don't know this. He writes back, just so you know, your mom hates it. I was like, all right. I would expect that from her. It is definitely jarring to see some of these courts that are a little bit bright.
I like them more for, I would use them in the playoffs. I would not.
It looks like they're superimposed in some cases.
I think
it's not actually the court. It's just like a TV mirage.
I think they look cool. I can't stand this tournament, but I like these courts.
Yeah, the tournament. If you actually have to tell people that it's happening, it feels like isn't the whole point of it to be excited. Fans are into it, but if fans don't know about it, then it's just weird.
We're having a tournament to basically motivate the players to play the regular season. It's totally ridiculous. I've never seen anything like it in my life. Not that the $70 million you're getting in your contract doesn't do that.
But the trip to Vegas and the opportunity to make extra money, might. To be fair, the rank and file in the NBA don't make $70 million. So there are some guys that could use the extra money. I mean, that's...
Oh, yeah, obviously, yeah. There's some that make the league minimum or whatever. Right, we know that. But, like, the LeBrons of the world, I don't think they need a tournament.
That's true. Although he was big into it. I think it's the Vegas part. A lot of athletes love Vegas.
Well, then get on your private jet and go during the All-Star break. Why does it matter?
I'm sure they do that, too.
Play every All-Star game in Vegas, then.
don't put any bugs in their ear. Hey, did you hear Mike Malone? This is kind of fun. He just tied the record for all-time wins as a Nuggets head coach. I can just promise you, he was over the moon excited.
I'm so excited about the win. I'm so excited about Russell Westbrook getting his 200th triple-double. I'm excited that both Michael and Jamal got going tonight. And Nick had said, hey, congratulations to you. And I'm like, for what? You know, I'm not like, I'd rather talk about taking our team to St. Jude's yesterday and spending time with those boys and girls, because that's so much more important than wins and stats and all that kind of stuff.
Mike Malone, he goes against the grain.
I like him.
I do too.
He's my favorite coach.
Is it because he takes no you know what?
Yes. Yes. I don't hear any nonsense from Mike Malone.
No, he's a no nonsense guy. And if you dare to diss his superstar, you get an earful. Which, by the way, isn't Jokic away from the team right now? I think 3 games he's missed because of something going on personally.
I believe so, yes.
So hope he is okay. Will Hardy, he is the head coach of the Jazz, and Will Hardy is maybe turning into a Mike Malone, more no nonsense about their effort.
I thought the beginning of the game was disappointing from an energy standpoint. I don't know exactly what the reason would be. It seemed like everybody in the gym knew that Dalton Connect was going to shoot the next shot, with the exception of a few people. The problem was that those few people were on our team.
That sounds a little bit like a Mike McDaniel in Miami, yes. Just the way that he sets you up, his dry humor. So he's referring to Dalton Connect had a coming out party last night, tied the rookie record for threes made, and had a career high 37. And the way he puts it is that everybody in the gym, with an exception of a few people, knew Dalton Connect was going to keep shooting. Sadly, those people were all on our team. They
the
were all wearing.
The problem was that those few people were on our team.
Jazz uniforms.
That's rough.
That's Hall of Flame material, Pete. We got to keep that for a future.
That's rough.
Hall of Flame. Yeah, that's awesome. He just threw them right under the bus and then rolled the bus back over them.
And rolled it back over again.
Oh, it's amazing. It's good. No nonsense. We like it. Dry humor, no nonsense. Mike Malone, Will Hardy. It's out of that same mold.
That's really the first quote we've played from Will Hardy.
Yeah. How many people out there do you think are hearing Will Hardy's name for the first time? Outside of Salt Lake City.
I will be very honest. I had to ask. I had to ask.
Google. Hey, Siri, who's Will Hardy? Oh, do you think there's any Siris out there listening that just heard me say, hey, Siri. Good morning, Siri. It's hump day.
You just woke up somebody.
I did. Who is Will Hardy? Oh, it's happening all over the country. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Here's our latest sports update. Hey, Siri, it's Marco Belletti.
Infinity Sports Network, Sports Flash.
Following Aaron Rodgers to the bench. That's apparently what owner Woody Johnson wanted to do after the Broncos' loss left the Jets at 2-2. Athletic reporting Johnson wanted Tyrod Taylor to replace Rodgers. Then he fired head coach Robert Saleh 1 week later after a loss in London to the Vikings left the team at 2-3. Now he's shown the door to GM Joe Douglas. Douglas gone just shy of 6 years in charge. He won just 30 out of 94 games, zero playoff appearances, failed to even have a winning season, as we'll also now see where Rodgers goes from here as well. Oregon remains on top of the newest college football rankings, followed by Ohio State, Texas, Penn State, and Indiana, as the top five remain unchanged. BYU dropped down to 14, as they would be the 12th seed in the current format. Fifth highest rated conference champion, Boise State sits at 12. They would be a 4 seed with a first round bye. Checking the NBA with the Celtics looking to cool off the Cavs.
Donovan Mitchell into the front court, jumps in with three, bounces out, offensive rebound Mobley, Jerome putback is good, but it all comes too late. And the Celtics survive a furious comeback by the Cleveland Cavaliers. And the second longest season opening win streak comes to an end.
120 to 117 as the Celtics hand the Cavs their first loss on the season, now 15-1. Jason Tatum, 33 points, 12 rebounds, 7 assists. Call courtesy of the Celtics Radio Network. Rest of your scores, the Mavericks dismiss the Pelicans 132-91. Nuggets roll the Grizzlies 122-100. Russell Westbrook is 200th career triple-double. Spurs took out the Thunder 110-104, and the Nets up in the Hornets 116-115 as they rallied from 17 points down. College hoops, top-ranked Kansas routed UNC Wilmington 84-66. UConn dominated East Texas A&M 81-46. 15th-ranked Marquette, too much for number 6, Purdue, 76-58. Kentucky overwhelmed Lipscomb, 97-68. Cincinnati erased Northern Kentucky, 76-60. And Florida had no problems with Florida A&M, 84-60. College football, Miami of Ohio down Northern Illinois, 20-9. Central Michigan withstood Western Michigan, 16-14, while Akron rolled Kent State, 38-17. And from baseball, Brewers' Pat Murphy, Cleveland's Stephen Vogt, they were named your managers of the year. I'm Marco Belletti.
Hey, sports fans, Bart Winkler here on the Infinity Sports Network. Check us out 24/7 on your smart speaker. Just say play Infinity Sports Network.
I think probably because I grew up listening to that, I'm smart enough to not worry about outside noise. I get that's part of this gig. That's life in the big city. My sole focus is getting this team ready to get a win on Thursday night. That's it.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
That's the voice of one Kevin Stefanski. So it's Mike McCarthy. It's Kevin Stefanski. It's who? Brian Daboll. It's all kinds of coaches now. Doug Peterson facing questions about whether or not they will be keeping their jobs once the season is done, or even before the season is done in some cases. We know that there are generally a couple firings as the season gets into its final month because teams want to get a jump start. Not that they can't be researching while they have a coach, but they want to get a jump start on the hiring process. So that generally tends to happen. Now, I've made a list. We talked about this last night or yesterday morning, depending upon when you listen, based on just the situations that we know right now. So Dallas, a lot of people think that's a foregone conclusion. Jacksonville, Las Vegas, the New York Jets already need a coach, as does New Orleans. Chicago is one that I've heard mentioned more and more now, that Matt Eberflus was given a second chance, but look what happened. Now, he's not an offensive guy. He's not an offensive coach. And so it's weird to kind of weigh the Caleb Williams success. The defense has been great for Chicago in many cases, as has special teams. So, but that seems to be one that's on the list. But I heard Adam Schefter on with Pat McAfee on Tuesday indicate that he wouldn't be surprised if the number was closer to 10. That's ludicrous. 10? My goodness, there are 8 first-year head coaches going back to the beginning of this season. If you fire 10 more, you're talking about, no joke, more than half the league with coaches who are in their first or second year. Now, the difference is, and Pete and I were talking about this earlier, there are more experienced head coaches who are currently without jobs. There are more guys who are sitting on other staffs, or they are taking a, we'll call it a gap year. They're taking a gap year and they're not coaching right now. But Bill Belichick obviously is one of those. And just to take like kind of that quick gap year theme a little farther, that's what Sean Payton did, right? He got out of coaching. He was still under contract with the Saints. He took a year in media and then he went back to the Broncos because he was waiting for a job that he wanted, and that one opened up and he was able to grab it. So there is that. I hope Bill Belichick is not done coaching, though I do really enjoy hearing him and his analysis and what I learned from him. But Bill Belichick, Ron Rivera, I mean, now Dennis Allen, though I don't know if he'll get another shot. Mike McCarthy could be available, and I wonder if he'll get hired again. Pete Carroll had said he wants to coach again. That, to me, seems like more of a long shot. But Mike Vrabel is another name that's out there.
Well, even like the second tier, like the guys that had jobs that haven't had been able to pick up something, like Marvin Lewis. You got Jim Caldwell, guys like that, that are still, like, maybe not the top candidate, but like those guys like that are still out there. No, and they have pretty decent winning records. Maybe not the coach that put a team over the top, but if you want to get some consistency back in your organization, those guys are out there too.
Well, Dan Quinn, he was a former head coach. He was the coordinator then in Dallas with the defense before he took this Washington job, and it's going really well for him. I think a lot of times coaches learn from their first runs, their mistakes. By the way, this camera is moving all around, and it's freaking me out. Someone's Kaplan. Operating the camera, and it's pointing right at me, and I know this one's pointing a different direction. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. So Adam Schefter tells Pat McAfee, he doesn't identify them. He just says that he believes there could be 8, 9. He wouldn't be surprised if the number was closer to 10. So does that include Cleveland? Well, you heard Kevin Stefanski. He's going to tell you what everybody has to tell you at this point, that you can't really pay attention to rumors. But I don't know. I feel like how, I guess with that ownership group and the decisions they've made, you shouldn't put anything past them. But how do you blame Stefanski for the fact that you gave one of the worst contracts in sports to a quarterback that was hit or miss at best? You didn't know for sure that he was ever going to be the Deshaun Watson that he was in Houston. And you went ahead and gave him that contract, even though, shouldn't it speak volumes that the vast majority of the rest of the NFL community thought that was crazy? And yet the Browns did it. And somehow it's Kevin Stefanski's fault. That's ridiculous. He's the reigning coach of the year. He's made lemonade out of lemons as best they possibly can. Sweet lemonade out of lemons. And he's doing what he can with what he's been given. The defense is underperforming, so that I know is a thing. But they're banged up too, like a lot of teams. You're going to give Dallas defense a bit of a pass because they're banged up. Then you've got to give the Browns one too. Giants maybe. Philadelphia, I've heard, if the Eagles bow out in the first round of the playoffs, or if they fall off the cliff like they did at the end of last season. The idea about Tennessee or New England or even Miami, I've heard that all those seem completely cockamamie to me. But I mentioned Dallas. Please tell me that you found the Micah Parsons. Oh my gosh. Okay. So you guys, this is where we like to end our hump show as we launch you forward into your Wednesday morning. I legit laughed out loud when I heard this clip from Micah Parsons' podcast evaluating the Cowboys through week 11.
I'm going to put this out there. We're a damn good football team. I know the scores ain't showing it, and I know, obviously, people feel like we got so many missing pieces, but I just truly believe, like, you almost got to go through things. Like, the things that we messing up on, like, I think our defense has really turned things around. Like, up until that last quarter when they got that touchdown defense, we only really gave up those two touchdowns in that first quarter. But other than that, we gave up 6 points in the other two quarters.
He spent the next good 60 seconds justifying why he says that we're a damn good football team. Now, I would say that might work if you are a college basketball or college football team appealing to the committee, but there's no committee to spare the Cowboys based on, oh, we had so many injuries, so they'd be a lot better. Hell no, you are what your record says you are. And if you have to justify how you're a damn good football team, you could be. You could be a damn good football team, which is what a lot of people were expecting, but you can't be if you don't have a run game and you have a backup quarterback and your defense is missing half its pieces and forgot how to tackle, apparently, with the other pieces. No, you're not a damn good football team, but that should make some people laugh. I love Micah Parsons. I really do. I think Micah is terrific. I wish he was on my team. He's a wrecking ball. He's got great energy. I think his podcast is also really interesting, too. I've learned a lot about him from his podcast. I think it's insightful at times, but I'm just going to throw this out there. We are a damn good football team. Hear me out. And then I felt or heard the Scooby-Doo reaction in my head.
Wow.
Have a great hump day. We'll talk to you tonight. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.